icons are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 78, At the Same Time, Wednesday, May 27th, 2015. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Yinhu Chaiyuan, Silver Lake Tea House. Show notes for this episode can be found on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. This week's episode includes the following segments: On the Porch, Ever Expanding Skill Set, and Off the Shelf. Thank you so much for the new iTunes review from Speejo Knits. I enjoy the feedback of receiving written reviews on iTunes and getting star ratings for the show as well. So thank you so much for that. We are wrapping up the month of May, and for hashtag Power Pantry, the exploration of making the most of the pantries in our home kitchens, we've been talking about specialty ingredients during the month of May, and folks have contributed some ideas for ingredients that help make the most of any meal or to elevate a meal. There are some great suggestions for quick yet impressive recipes that, or recipe ideas that you might try when you have unexpected guests, and so on. So I hope you'll contribute your ideas and then check back to see what others have shared. During the month of June, I will be focusing on the fridge or the refrigerator and how to make the best use of the largest appliance in our kitchens, and often the one that consumes the most energy. So it's important to use the refrigerator wisely, and it can be a benefit to our cooking if we think about it carefully. The month of May is also known as Me Made May for folks who craft garments and accessories for themselves. And I've been running an Instagram contest during the month of May, inviting listeners to post a photograph of themselves wearing a handmade garment or accessory. This could be knitting or crochet, but it could also be something that's sewn. It could be jewelry making. It could be a variety of different things. And I will be drawing three winners at the end of the month. One winner will receive the gift of a pattern prize for a pattern that's available on Ravelry. Another winner will receive some of my cosmic wonder worms or hand-blended Rolags for spinning. These are especially nice for spinning with a drop spindle. And the third winner will win a project bag, handmade, hand-sewn, by me. And I thought I would also provide some additional choices for the winner of the project bag, because I have some other things that might interest you. One is that I used only 4 of the 8 feather appliques on the skirt that I completed. So I still have 4 beautiful quilts. I used quilting techniques to make these feathers with strip piecing of a variety of different kinds of fabric. And then they are all pressed and they are ready to hand applique onto the garment or accessory of your choice. So if you'd prefer having those feathers to a project bag, that can be arranged. And the other item is a piece of rust-dyed fabric for you to make something of your own design. I think it would work up nicely into a little drawstring bag. In fact, I could sew it into a little drawstring bag for you if you like. Or maybe you would just like to have the fabric and then see what you could do with it and your own imagination. So the grand prize winner of this little contest will have a choice of a variety of different things. To enter this contest, you should post a photograph of yourself wearing a handmade garment or accessory on Instagram and use hashtag YAYHMMMAY15. All of the information about this contest and information about all of the prizes is located on the Yarns at Yinhu group forum on Ravelry. On the porch, usually this segment is either on the back porch, completed objects, or on the front porch, things that I have just begun. But this week, it's on the porch because the things I have to talk about are projects that I have been working on for a while, and they're still not done. They're a little bit more involved projects, so they're taking a while, and there have also been a number of other things vying for my attention this month. Just a lot of gardening and around the house kind of work to do, and lots of functions at work. I had a goal of completing Hane, which is a knit summer top designed by Kirsten Johnstone, by the end of May. It continues to be a possibility. I've made great progress on this sweater. It's being knit on US size 4 needles in Shibui linen in the clay color. It's a beautiful terracotta color, and I really enjoy working with the linen. This garment is knit flat because sometimes linen knit in the round tends to have a little bit of a bias in the fabric. So this is knit flat in stockinette, which means a lot of purling, and there is short row shaping to create kind of a ruched side on one side. So it has some beautiful drape that accentuates the waist. At the same time as this short row shaping is happening, there is also decreasing for the waist and then increasing for the bust. I believe this is the first time I have followed pattern directions that include at the same time. I've heard other podcasters talk about that, and I thought I had an idea of what that meant, but it really is important to keep track of what should be happening at the same time. Otherwise, you're only following one set of directions. You're only following the short row shaping, and you're not decreasing appropriately for the waistline, or you're only following the decreasing and increasing for the overall garment, and you're not following the pattern detail of the short row shaping. So I used a little system that I devised for myself to keep track of where I was with both sets of those at the same time directions. What really came in handy was a little booklet of post-its and colored page markers that was in our goodie bag at the Super Summer Knit Together last summer. And I wrote down on the post-it, okay, the first round is going to be yellow. So if I step away from my directions and then I look back and I see there's a yellow flag there, I know I'm on the first round. And the second round will be orange and so on and so forth. And then the decreasing and increasing happened on rows 4, 12, 20, and 28 of a 30-row repeat. So I would just take that yellow tag and I would place it over row 4. So as I was looking at my pattern, I would see, okay, there's something coming up on row 4. Oh, right, that means I need to do the decreases there. And then as soon as I completed row 4, I would remove that yellow tag and I would stick it back down on row 12 so that I knew where I needed to perform that at the same time portion again. And then I used a stitch counter to keep track of my rows. This has worked incredibly well, and I am finished with the 7 rounds or 7 sets of 30 rows for the main body of the sweater. I actually played around with the waist shaping a little bit and I moved it up, and I also stopped just short of completing the full 7 rounds because I measured the length of the garment at that point and it was already a little bit longer than what was specified for the pattern. I am very long-waisted, so I think having more fabric will assure that this garment isn't too short and doesn't ride up. But I also think that the linen will stretch out a little bit, so I don't want to make it too long. So before completing all of the parts of the pattern for the body, I moved on to the shaping for the armholes and the back of the sweater. That's where I am now, knitting the back of the sweater, and this still needs to have front portion of the sweater complete, and then a sleeve, a short sleeve with a folded hem, goes on one arm of the sweater, and then a ruffled flounce. It's not exactly a sleeve, but it sort of overhangs the shoulder a little bit, goes on the other sleeve over the other arm. I think this is going to be a very flattering and interesting looking sweater if it fits and I am able to wear it. I still need to wait until it's seamed up and blocked to see how this truly fits. I think with linen, you know, it's really difficult to get a sense of what it's going to be like on your body until the project is complete. Once again, this is Hane. And Hane is a Japanese word that means feather or plume. I believe there are several garments in this collection by Kirsten Johnstone that have to do with Japanese characters and creating a garment that's reminiscent of what's suggested by the character. I think this is a beautiful, beautiful piece, and I will be very happy to own the finished project when it's completed. It's been a lot of work, knit at, you know, quite a small gauge, but it still remains a possibility that this will be completed by the end of Me Made May. Another project on which I am making good progress, but it is not done, is the Summer Surprise Challenge, sponsored or hosted by lovers of Jenkins yarn tools. We have been invited to purchase a package of fiber from Nonoko. It contained a wild array of bits and pieces, and I chose the textured package, which meant that there's some silk noil in there. The first step of the challenge was to blend the fiber, and now the second step of the challenge is to spin the fiber on your Jenkins Turkish spindles and then ply in whatever way you choose. I am halfway done with the spinning. I had two sets of matching Rolags that are kind of in fraternal twin pairs, and I've spun all of batch A, so balls 1, 2, and 3 of batch A, and now I'm going to be moving on to batch B and spinning balls 1, 2, and 3 of batch B. When I'm all completed with that spinning, then I will begin with ball 1 of batch A and B, and I will start plying those together. I guess I could even start plying those first two balls before I finish spinning the second batch. That could be interesting, but I tend to, you know, spin all of the singles first and then do all of the plying, and I think I will ply on my Louette wheel. I didn't realize, but I found out this week that we were put into smaller groups depending on the type of fiber that we received from Nonoko, and that each little group is competing for a chance to win some prizes. And in the past, I've been pretty successful winning prizes for these challenges, so I'm hopeful that maybe I'll be a lucky winner again. We have until June 30th to complete the spinning and plying of our fiber. And then after June 30th, I will be a member of the Jenkins Yarn Tools team for Tour de Fleece. Every listener who is already a spinner probably knows about Tour de Fleece, but for those who may be new spinners, or some of my listeners who are not so involved in the fiber arts but just like to listen along, Tour de Fleece is a very charming name for a challenge that occurs in conjunction with the Tour de France bike race. And spinners of all types are invited to create a challenge, a personal challenge for themselves, and to spin every day that the bikers are racing in the Tour de France. Some goals could be, you know, just as simple as you're going to spin 15 minutes a day. A lot of the time, spinners will identify a project that they want to complete by the end of the Tour de France. Sometimes there's a yardage amount or using up stash. Also mastering the use of a new tool could be a possibility. There are also some super challenging days in the bike race, and on those days, spinners are invited to tackle a particularly difficult challenge. There are also rest days, and spinners can take those days as days of rest for their own spinning. So there's lively discussion, a lot of posting of photographs, both on Ravelry and on other social media like Instagram. So if you're curious, you can start to see these posts going up at the beginning of Tour de Fleece. And this year that starts on July 4th. Some people also watch the bike race while they're spinning. That can be a kind of nice way to commemorate it. And spinners also compete on different teams. So there's a Tour de Fleece Ravelry board, and then folks join teams. I guess sometimes they can join more than one team and compete with other teams to see how much folks are accomplishing. I think it's a lot of fun. I think spinning in the summer is great for me for two reasons. One, I love to take my spinning wheel out on the porch and work on projects in the fresh air. And two, spinning with a drop spindle is really, really portable. And it's easier for me to do than knitting because I don't need to pay the same kind of attention. I can focus on other people, engage in conversation while I'm spinning, and I'm not so distracted by my project. People are also very fascinated by spinning, especially children, and want to know what I'm doing and how I'm doing that, what I'm making. So I think, taking drop spindles on the road if I'm traveling or vacationing over the summer, it's a great way to keep being productive with projects while I'm away from my spinning wheel. I have nearly completed a project that's been on my wheel for many months, and that is a three ply of a braid of fiber dyed by Haven Fiber. I bought this in Rutland, Vermont at the yarn shop there. I think it's Green Mountain Fibers, it's called. The fiber didn't have a colorway, but it's really brilliant jewel tones as well as some very bright turquoise. And it's a Corriedale wool. It's wonderful to work with. And this is my first three ply of a dyed braid. I forget exactly what I did now to divide the colors of the fiber to make the three ply, but I did do a kind of fractal spinning. And what that means is I broke the fiber up in such a way that each of my three bobbins would have color moving through it at a different rate, so that when I plied it together, the optimum situation would be that there would be three strands of fiber being plied together at all times, and that those three individual singles would be different colors. I've completed the plying and it's really a success. I love the rounded look of the three ply. I think it just looks so plump and so brilliant. And the separation or the modulation of color is really interesting and lively throughout the skein. One of the bobbins was a lot shorter on yardage than the other two, so I made a three ply as long as I could, and then I made another smaller skein of two ply with the remainder. This has all been plied, as I said, but I have not yet wound it into a skein. And that's the part of the process when I also count the yardage. So I'm not exactly sure yet what yardage I've achieved for this project and what I could do with the yarn. I really have no idea. But I like the way it looks, and I like to leave it resting on the bobbin for at least 24 hours before I wind it into a skein. I'll report back on the yardage that I achieved and show photographs of the finished yarn in my next podcast episode. Ever expanding skill set. One of the extraordinary aspects of taking a year-long course at Fibercraft Studio is the chance to continue expanding my skill set based on the influence and the inspiration of my classmates and all of the marvelous publications, examples, and ideas that are housed at the studio. Someone who is always coming in with a new magazine or a new pattern or some new yarn that they've acquired, and everyone has a chance to touch it and ask questions about it. And folks are lending tools and equipment and books and magazines back and forth all the time. I came across a publication called TAC, which is a magazine of the Textile Arts Center. And there was an article in one of the issues about rust dyeing. I think I saw this back in January or February, and I borrowed the magazine from the studio, and I just couldn't wait for warmer weather so that I could give this a try. I knew that this was an idea I just wanted to try. Dyeing with rust can take on several different forms, and this summer I'm going to attempt three different variations of rust dyeing. First of all, protein or animal fibers are not suitable for rust dyeing because the rust will break down the fiber and it will become brittle or just break apart. So this is for plant fibers. I purchased a quantity of 100% cotton muslin that is unbleached. It's a really tight weave, and it has little speckles on an off-white background. It's beautiful, beautiful fabric. And I'm going to cut that into strips of various sizes and try a few different techniques. One technique requires you to pre-soak the fabric in a solution of vinegar and water. And then you lay it out and place objects that are already rusted or objects that will rust on the fabric. And then you can fold the fabric over. You keep the fabric moist all of the time with a solution of vinegar and water. You can also cover your dyeing project, which is a good idea so that it doesn't dry out, but you don't want to seal it off from oxygen completely because some air circulation is needed for the oxidation to occur. I had collected a number of rusty items from my mom's property when I was there visiting her around Mother's Day, and so I was placing nails and pieces of broken barbed wire on this fabric, and then I put it in the sun for a few days. Another technique that I will use is to make a rust dye bath. And into that dye bath can go pieces of folded fabric that are tied or maybe clamped. And this is sort of a variation on tie dyeing, I suppose, and submerging the fabric into the dye bath. Sometimes if a clamp is used, this is referred to as itajime, and ita in Japanese means fold and jime means clamp. So it's a kind of clamp resist dyeing that the portion in the center that's clamped really tight will not take the dye, but then the places of the fabric that are exposed will take on the dye, and you can make really interesting designs with that folding technique. If you add very, very strong black tea to the rust dye bath, then you come up with a dye that's a beautiful graphite gray color. And that can also be used to dye the fabric in a dye bath kind of situation. All of this is fascinating to me. I have long had a love of rusted and decaying objects. And now that I'm doing a bit of sewing, I see a number of applications for fabric that has been treated this way. It's also a little less time intensive than other methods of dyeing. So I think that in combination with maybe more involved ways of dyeing yarn and fiber, playing around with this rust dyeing will be a lot of fun. I look forward to sharing the results of this process with Yarns at Yinhu listeners in the form of photographs and also talking about it on the show. And you have the opportunity to win a piece of rust dyed fabric by entering the Me Made May Instagram contest. And I mentioned how to do that earlier in the episode. Off the shelf. This week, I'd like to talk about a book that I recently received. It's a new publication by Rebecca Ringquist, and it's titled Embroidery Workshops: A Bend the Rules Primer. I haven't had occasion to do too many book reviews on the show. I don't buy every new publication. I'm pretty conservative about my purchases, I guess you could say. But I have been following Rebecca Ringquist and watching her video tutorials for embroidery on Creative Bug. And when I found out that she was putting out her first book and that it had to do with embroidery, I couldn't resist. I pre-ordered a copy, and this has been on my desk for several weeks now. I haven't had the time to begin any of the projects, but I've been looking through it again and again, and I'd really like to talk about this book to Yarns at Yinhu listeners because I think it might interest a number of you. It's a beautiful hardcover book. It's not quite as thick as a coffee table book, but it has a lot of the features of a coffee table book. Namely, you can just get a huge amount of inspiration and a healthy dose of aesthetic pleasure by just paging through it and looking at the photographs. Even if you never take on any of these projects at all, I think it's an enjoyable book to look at. It's very artfully done. The layout is gorgeous. The text is nicely sized and easy to read. And the book has six sections: get ready, stitch, trace, draw, layer, and finish. It's clear that Rebecca Ringquist has conceived of the text as a whole and thought very carefully about how all of these parts work together. In her tutorials on Creative Bug, Rebecca Ringquist communicates her idea of aesthetics in embroidery. And this is not your grandmother's embroidery. This is not stitching according to rules in a very proper manner. She believes more is more. She likes layering stitches on top of stitches. She frequently mixes up machine embroidery, hand embroidery, and found pieces or vintage pieces of embroidery within the same work. If I ever have the opportunity, I'd love to see a live exhibit of her work, but the things that I've seen online, I find very striking in an unusual way. And the book really follows that aesthetic ideal that more is more, that play and layering are important. If you're looking for a stitch dictionary or a primer on making embroidery stitches, this is very, very basic in its instruction on the stitches. There's a gal who teaches classes on Craftsy who does a great many more stitches and covers a lot more content, but I don't think that her tutorials are half as inspiring as Rebecca Ringquist's, and she only covers some very basic stitches. The idea is that you use them in inventive ways, and so you don't need to know any complicated embroidery in order to make something exquisite. So she covers line stitches, and then she covers a few fancier or decorative stitches. There's a get ready section in which she provides a really good review of the tools that you might like to use for embroidery. And she emphasizes the fact that, you know, for about 10 or 20 bucks, you can set yourself up with all you need to do lots of enjoyable projects. In the tracing section, there are directions about different methods of tracing and transferring patterns and drawings and images onto fabric so that you can use them as templates for your stitching. And then drawing goes more into depth regarding creating the images and the outlines that you can put onto fabric rather than just tracing something that you find. And then in layering, she talks about how to, you know, definitely the more is more, how to layer drawn things with patterns that exist on fabrics and just to keep building on these ideas to create your own unique pieces. And then finishing has some various kinds of finishing techniques and ways to make your projects beautiful gifts, I think, to sort of package them or to present them, not just as a piece of fabric with embroidery on it, but as a product that you could hang on a wall or make into another thing or give as a gift. In each of the sections, there are a variety of projects. And when you look at them, you can see, okay, this is a project, but I can also think of like a million other things I could do with this idea. And that's where, you know, the coffee table book aspect of this embroidery workshops really comes into play. I'd just like to talk about a few of the projects that really captured my interest and things that I would like to try working on this summer. One is called Doodling Onto Polka Dots. She shares a photograph of a stack of fabric that has polka dots on it, some small polka dots, some very large. And then she shows how you can doodle on the fabric and then use that doodling as a template for stitching so that you can create something really unique and interesting, and you've just worked with the dots. It kind of reminds me of that brain bending game where you're just given a piece of paper with a whole bunch of circles on it, and you try to make those circles into as many different things as you can. I always really enjoyed that game. That's kind of what you're doing with this. Another project I really liked is, Stitch Doodle Bracelets. These are very simple fabric bracelets that you make by doodling onto fabric and then embroidering the doodles with different colors of embroidery thread. And then she shows you how to fold it and attach snaps and a little tab so that you can turn this piece of fabric into a bracelet. It's just clever, pretty simple. Many of the instructions in this book will result in a one-of-a-kind project, something that really sings with your own unique stamp or fingerprint. The third thing I like, and I think this would make an incredible gift, is a pattern-on-pattern pot holder. This is great for someone who wants to combine some hand embroidery techniques with sewing machine skills. That's something I would like to do. So there are directions for how to make a potholder, and you make the potholder with fabrics that have two distinctive patterns, and you embroider the pattern from one side of the potholder as a kind of echo or shadow on the other side. It's really striking, very unique, a great way to play with vintage fabrics or small pieces of fabric that are left over from other projects, maybe precious things or rescued things that you just don't want to give up or give away, and you could turn them into something new. There are directions in here for machine embroidery, beautiful directions, photography of the steps of more complicated projects, fantastic layout, as I said. And in the back, there is a cloth sampler that you can use to practice stitches and create something unique and special of your own. Rebecca Rehnquist is the owner of Drop Cloth Samplers, which you can find online. She has individual samplers for sale, as well as a subscription to a once a month sampler. And she designs these samplers herself. So it's a really interesting take on the sampler, which is from a different era. Certainly, when we thought about the role of women and women's handicrafts very differently than we do today. But she infuses these samplers with very bold markings and encourages a playfulness that goes contrary to what we may think of when we think about embroidery. Rebecca Rehnquist learned how to embroider in a feminist art history class. I think that says a lot about her attitude toward embroidery and what she wishes to do with her work as a teacher. As an educator, I can really appreciate the way she's using this text as a teaching tool. I think if you're already skilled with some embroidery skills, you can use this book on its own to achieve a lot of really fantastic projects. If you are new to embroidery, I think this book would be a fantastic companion to any one of Rebecca Rehnquist's tutorials on Creative Bug. Once again, this is Rebecca Rehnquist's Embroidery Workshops, a Bend the Rules primer. And it's available in hard copy for $29.95 in the US. You can purchase this on Amazon, and I believe you can also order this through Rebecca Rehnquist's Drop Cloth site. I will provide some links to that in the show notes.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, flowery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Curtis, but out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Yes, a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Music for today's episode is Sweet, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes, liking the show's Facebook page, or participating in the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Nature thing, yes, a sweet nature thing, yes, a mighty fine nature thing, yes, a mighty fine nature thing, it's a mighty fine nature thing.